And wishing you a very good morning. Today is the 13th day of November, 2024. Mark DeGroft here with you for the reading of the Green Valley News. Taking a look at what's happening around the area weather-wise. 79 for our high today. To low tonight will be 47. Tomorrow, 85. Friday, 78. Saturday, 68. Sunday, 61. And the lows are hanging around 48 degrees. No rain in our forecast until Saturday, with a 5% chance and 85% chance of showers on Sunday. Around the listening areas, Sierra Vista 74 for you today, Green Valley 79, Vail 76, Marana 77, Sabino Canyon 77, Oracle 70, Mount Lemmon 58, and lots of sun. And it's currently 56 degrees in Green Valley. Comfortable today with plenty of sunshine. Moonlit sky tonight and cold to the east. Plenty of sun tomorrow near the border. Pleasant to the east on Friday. Mostly sunny and nice, but mostly cloudy near the border. Saturday, partly sunny and cooler, however, increasing clouds. And again, that 85% chance of rain on Sunday. So that takes care of the weather. Let's go ahead and see what's happening in the Green Valley News. The Pima County Board of Supervisors on Tuesday unanimously approved seeking an investigation into Sheriff Krisnanos, but they stopped short of putting a censure on the table. The original agenda pushed forward by Supervisor Matt Hines called for both an investigation and a censure, but County Civil Attorney Sam Brown cautioned against a censure, which is an official reprimand before an investigation. Board Chair Adelita Grijalva asked Brown if they could censure another elected official. Brown told supervisors that he couldn't, but said that the county's office would look into specifics when Hines asked why the board didn't have the authority. But the general answer is the board simply does not have the expressed authority to do so, he said. Supervisor Steve Christie supported Hines' call for censure and investigation. Christie seconded Hines' amended motion for an investigation by the State Attorney General's Office and the U.S. Attorney's Office and any other appropriate third parties without the censure attached to it. Supervisor Sylvia Lee said the board should find legal language to convey displeasure over Nanios' action. Christie also asked why a legal opinion wasn't prepared for the board before the meeting before the censure item. Brown didn't provide a response. The move came after Nanios placed his Republican challenger in the sheriff's race, Lieutenant Heather Lappin, on administrative leave along with a vocal supporter, Sergeant Aaron Cross. Nanos' action came 3 weeks and a day before the November 5th election. The board can collectively voice its displeasure with the acts of another elected official. There may be ramifications in doing so, Brown told supervisors. You all care to discuss that in executive session or a more appropriate session context. If you are, well, I'm happy to do so. Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays revealed Tuesday that two-thirds of Arizona's counties, twice as many as was previously known, received bomb threats on Election Day. The FBI said on Election Day that several states received bomb threats against particular polling locations and that the threats originate from Russian email domains. None of the threats have been deemed credible. During a roundtable session with journalists, Mays elaborated on those threats when asked by the Arizona Mirror, adding that 10 of Arizona's 15 counties had received threats. She said that a county supervisor in La Paz County called her personally after they received one. The counties that received threats were Cochise, Coconino, Gila, La Paz, Maricopa, Navajo, Pima, Pinal, Yavapai, and Yuma. It's really a troubling sign of where we are as a country, Mays said. It has a very disruptive effect. Mays said that the non-credible threats did not impact the election as a whole, but many places across the country and in Arizona had to undergo evacuations due to the threats. May said that officials in La Paz County had to evacuate on election night as ballots were starting to arrive to be tabulated. We were dealing with that on a real-time basis with local law enforcement, she said, adding that Arizona's Counterterrorism Information Center was helping coordinate efforts. Other states seemingly had it worse, like Georgia, which reported over 60 bomb threats. An analysis of the threats by NBC News found that many targeted largely Democratic areas. The Arizona Secretary of State's office said it does not have any additional info to add. And on the night of the election, Maricopa County Recorder Steve Reicher was seen evacuating his office due to one of those threats. Despite the threats, elections across the country ran relatively smoothly. And in a related story, disheartened but not giving up, that's how local Democrats are feeling days after Donald Trump regained the White House. The Republicans won a majority in the Senate and House, and bet that still hangs in the balance. We're regrouping, said George McGaughey, who's president of the Green Valley Democrats. In 2 years, we'll have another election. We'll have the possibility of new people in Congress and LD-19. So our focus is on helping them get new candidates up for these positions and help supporting them once again as we have this year. During an interview with McGaughey and Sandy Stone, who takes the reins of the club in January, a woman dropped by to thank everyone at the headquarters for their hard work. "We did our best. Don't give up," McGaughey told her. The woman joked that she was just going to go cry now. Stone heard a friend who told her on Tuesday it was one of the most depressing days that he has ever suffered in his life. She said Democrats will find the good in it, and we're moving forward. Jean Buell, the vice president of the Democratic Club of Quail Creek, said she was surprised by the low voter turnout. She rattled off state and national voter turnout numbers from the past two major elections, and all were greater than what we're seeing in 2024. On Friday, Arizona's turnout was just over 62%. "So it's not just here," Buell said, "and I don't think anybody saw that coming. They thought it was going to be a record turnout. They thought it would be 2020. I'd be anxious to hear why they didn't get the vote." John Murphy, the immediate past president of QC Dems, agreed that the low turnout was a surprise, especially after Democrats put through so much effort into educating people of the importance of 2024. "Trump thinks he's going to become king of the United States. He hasn't made any bones about it. He's pretty much told people that that's what he's going to do," Murphy said. "He tried to do it in his first term, then with January 6th, and that was quite disheartening to see people attacking the U.S. Capitol. It told me that this guy is just about capable of trying anything." "Exactly how we got here, that's the big question," he said. Democrats noted a victory with Proposition 139, which enshrines abortion rights into the state constitution, but they noted that's a win for Arizona and not the nation. "We are in mourning," said Lois Connell, treasurer of the Green Valley Democrats. "Our friends are in mourning. We have friends, and we can't talk on the phone without listening to them cry. People are that deeply disturbed, but people are also angry. They're not going away. We are not going away, and that is something I think the opposition hopes will happen. They have awakened a giant." Nobody's crying at the Quail Creek Republican Club, though. "I'm excited about it," said club president Patricia Colburn. "I'm elated about it. Our club has worked really closely with our precinct number 84. They're really getting the word out, educating our members. We had local candidates speak at our meetings. We had get-togethers focusing on our local candidates as we could get them. Our club had a lot of outreach, and we really stressed educating our members on the politics, on the differences." She said the policies on the left just didn't match up with what most people in this country want in their lives. One surprise, Colburn said, was how decisively Trump won. "That told me that this country has accepted him and his policies. In 2020, I think the voters were voting emotionally. I think this time it was a much better run race in many respects," she said. "It was a resounding win. I think our club is in for and ready for a huge celebration." "Not so fast," said Dave Smith, chairman of the Pima County Republican Party. "The work isn't over, with about 780,000 votes still not counted in Arizona as of last Thursday night. They're still watching several races." That will be pivotal, whether Christy wins or Steve Spain or Janet Wittenbrecker or John Becker or Carrie Lake. We still have outstanding outstanding contested congressional seats, legislative district seats. After we get the votes counted, then we'll sit down, analyze our strategy, and then decide where to go next, what worked, what didn't. We'll took from the Democratic playbook, let's get those ballots mailed in. Republicans have always been same-day voters, period. And now we said, look, mail it in early, avoid any kind of possible shenanigans. It's hard to feel that kind of way we have the results, he said. Smith said he went to bed Tuesday concerned. We had only won the presidency. When I went to bed, we had secured the Senate. The House was up at the national level. The state House is still in question. The Senate is still in question, he said. Locally, LD-17, we have a huge struggle. I really can't make hard decisions until I have hard facts. And right now, there's a lot of cleaning up to do. There's a lot of housekeeping to do after an election, a lot of signs to pick up. And by the way, your Green Valley people on the side of the shop are fantastic, Smith said. All of Pima County can always rely on the Green Valley folks to pitch in and be major players in our elections. So what's next? McGaughey said the local Democrats are proud of their hard work, ready for the next round. We were able to knock on 6,000 doors in the Green Valley and Sorita areas, he said. We mailed out 3,000 postcards to voters in southeastern Arizona. We helped support LD-19 candidates and the clubs in southeastern Arizona. We were able to put up more street signs than ever before. We had more people asking for rides to the polls than ever before, so we were able to support them. The major thing was we had enough volunteers coming in to keep the headquarters open 6 days a week for over a month and a half. We've had a good sweeping support of volunteers, and because of that support, we're now financially sound going into the next 4 years. Pima County Democrats did not respond to a request for an interview. And that was written by intern Cody Hedges. It is 9:43 here at Sunsounds of Arizona. Good morning. The Regional Transportation Authority held an open house in Green Valley on Thursday for the $2.46 billion 20-year RTA next draft plan that could go before the county voters in November of 2025. The open house at Joyner Green Valley Library had about 25 people show up for a 10-minute presentation followed by roughly 90 minutes where residents could ask nearly 20 RTA staff members questions about the Regional Transportation Plan. The RTA next draft has a $1.4 billion allocated for roadway corridors, $20 million for arterial construction, $610 million for transit, $206.8 million for safety ADA and active transportation, and $25 million for environmental projects like wildlife linkages. The RTA next, like the first RTA plan approved in 2006, would rely on funding through a half-cent countywide sales tax on everything except groceries and pharmaceuticals. One local project would add buffered bike lanes on Camino de la Canoa from the White House Canyon Road to Canoa Preserve Park. The other would add buffered bike lanes on White House Canyon Road from Continental Road to Campbell Avenue. RTA funding is geared towards new projects and not to be used for road maintenance work. Among the categories, Green Valley is not only specifically included in the $206.8 million for the ADA, that's the Americans with Disabilities Act. The draft calls for $5.8 million in Green Valley projects. The transportation funding would also maintain Sun Shuttle service currently in operation in Green Valley. The second road project is also included in the draft for Pima Mine Road from I-19 to Nogales Highway. Widening to a four-lane roadway with bicycle, pedestrian, and drainage improvements. The project has $39 million, while Green Valley only has $5.8 million in ADA and active transportation projects included in the draft. Ellis said the overall regional improvements in the metro area would benefit Green Valley residents traveling to the Tucson area, including the airport. Jonathan Crow from Pima County Department of Transportation said that a lot of the draft plan projects are in other parts of the region, but there are categorical amounts of money allocated for bike, transit, pedestrian, economic, and environmental projects that could spread throughout the region. And he said categorical buckets of money would be distributed throughout the region should the voters approve RTA next, adding that that could be where Green Valley people benefit the most. For example, there's a lot of bicycle needs down here and a lot of interest in cycling, and a lot of constituents are excited about bicycling down here and have been lobbying for bicycle improvements, Crow said. And I think that's one of the pots of money that the RTA Next plan would provide to allow us to do some bicycle projects in the Green Valley area. I think it would be very popular. Let's see, another open house is scheduled for the Suarita Town Hall on December 3rd. That's located at 375 West Suarita Center Way. Sign-in is from 5 to 5:30 p.m. The program runs from 5:30 to 7 p.m. And residents can also comment online at rtanext.com. It's written by Assistant Editor Jorge Encinas. Carlos Valles was about a half was about an hour away from handing out diplomas to nearly three newly minted welders Thursday afternoon when his mood improved even more. The Freeport McMoran Foundation was so pleased with the Suarita Food Bank and Community Resource Center's new welding program that it agreed to sponsor 18 new students over the next year. The news was particularly welcome because there are already 33 students on a waiting list hoping to accomplish what Roman Yates, 23 years old, Isaiah Iguado, 29, and Connor Frazel, 20 years old, did on Thursday. And that was graduate from the Food Bank Saguaro Skills Center with a welding certificate. Since June, the three young men have been learning the ins and the outs of welding from instructors Keith Hansen and Allison Lemons. At first, they underwent 300 hours of augmented virtual reality training, and toward the end they spent 100 hours in a warehouse for live training provided by former board chair Hathaway Cornelius. The Fundamentals of Welding course is one of two courses offered by the Food Bank, which was licensed about a year ago as a vocational school by the Arizona State Board of Private Postsecondary Education. The men who graduated on Thursday were the first to take the welding course, which was started with a $138,000 grant from Freeport. And so far, eight have finished the Google IT Support Program, which is primarily a remote class, said Sophia Castro, who is the program manager. Board member Penny Pessel said they hope to add courses on renewable energy that would cover solar installations, battery installations, repair and maintenance. And we have one employer that has said that they would hire 10 people, Pestel said. One of the food bank's goals is to find courses that closely align employees' needs with student interests. During the graduation ceremony, Pestel thanked the students for being their guinea pigs. Speaking of guinea pigs, not many students get to help that design the program or work directly with instructors. They help to set up the equipment, Vias said. He also thanked Hansen, who introduced himself during a volunteer event, and Lemons, whom he met through Pessel. Hansen congratulated the graduates, said he couldn't have asked for better students. Within weeks, they developed the motor skills they needed in order to do the work, and they just kept improving and improving and improving, Hansen said. Lemons, who is a 25-year-old public school teacher, said she never knew what a pleasure it could be to teach adults, and she, too, thank the graduates for their patience as they put the program together. I'm very grateful for this group of gentlemen. As a teacher, it's our goal to try and make it where you don't need us anymore. And I can honestly say that your welding skills surpassed mine by far. They did a long time ago, Lemon said. All three of Thursday night's graduates thanked their families, instructors, and the rest of the food bank staff for their help. They're already on the hunt for jobs in their field. Iguado, who heard about the program from his father-in-law, said he'd highly recommend the course. It's a great opportunity. The instructors were great. They were very supportive, very helpful, Iguado said, and they just did a great job. Frazzle said he hopes to get on with Freeport or any company that will work with his school schedule. He is a U of A engineering student. And Yates said that he would love to go to work for Crown Concepts in Tucson, which restores and custom builds cars. It's written by Kim Smith, reporter for GVN. 9:50, More than 200 Green Valley residents turned out on Thursday for a two-hour forum on the latest scam techniques, how to avoid becoming victimized. The Fight Fraud Day Forum, sponsored by the Green Valley Council, lets residents hear from the Pima County Sheriff's Department's fraud unit and ask questions of more than a dozen other law enforcement agencies and banking experts who set up tables around the Des Hills Recreation Center. I don't want anybody here in Green Valley to not have the tools they need to prevent themselves from being a victim of fraud, Lieutenant Courtney Rodriguez said. It's absolutely heartbreaking when I hear about somebody losing their life savings or anything else to some of these scammers. Sergeant Kevin Gardner told the crowd his fraud unit received 70 to 130 cases per month. He drew gasp when he told them he only gives one to three of them to his detectives to pursue. The problem is that the vast majority of suspects aren't in the United States. So let's take a look at some of those scams and ways to prevent them. Before accepting social media friend requests, make sure you know them in real life. Confirm the profile actually belongs to your friend. Check for mutual friends. Be suspicious of low friend numbers on the part of the requester. Do their posts appear to be spam, leading you to unusual websites? Be suspicious of profiles with overly professional-looking photos in limited numbers or images that are highly cropped. And when answering calls from purported law enforcement agencies, government agencies, lotteries, and other companies, get the name and the title, the badge number, their phone number, the agency and reference numbers, and then hang up to verify that information. Locate a verified phone number for the entity that called you on your own. Don't use the phone number the caller provided, as it could have been spoofed. Have the entity connect you with the original caller via their own internal means while also confirming the information that the original caller provided. And when you're using social media, consider limiting your posts and photos and stories to more restricted groups rather than the entire net. Restrict personal identifying information such as your birthdays, your phone numbers, anything about your family members, photo albums, and email addresses. Do it as much as possible. Publicly displaying it can make you more vulnerable to identity theft. And when using the internet, use strong and unique passwords or phrases, and avoid using the same password on all of your sites. Be on the alert for emails that contain typos, poor punctuation, uncommon formatting, oddly worded sentences, or incomplete sentences. That's a dead giveaway. Don't be afraid to use mobile banking because they use advanced security methods like passwords, two-factor authentication, facial recognition, and even fingerprints. And users can set up alerts to be notified of suspicious transactions and withdrawals over a certain limit. And paper statements are so slow, so having a mobile app would allow each suspicious transactions faster. Consider alternatives to writing checks because they can be easily stolen, quickly reprinted, altered, and forged. Peer-to-peer services such as Zelle are integrated into most mobile banking apps and allow you to make quick money transfers to others as simple as typing in a phone number. Credit cards use funds that belong to the bank and not you, thus providing additional buffers between your money and potential scammers. And certified cashier's checks and money orders increase security as well. Additional tips, no government agency, including law enforcement agencies, the IRS, or the FBI, will ever ask for payment via gift cards. Anytime anyone asks you to purchase gift cards and send them the code on the back, should immediately raise red flags. Don't give it to them. Be suspicious of text messages that has the plus symbol followed by additional numbers, as it likely means the sender is outside of the United States. And be suspicious if a text sender is trying to send you to a website, but the web address doesn't match the entity they claim to represent. Be on the alert for texts that contain many typos, poor punctuation, uncommon formatting, oddly worded sentences. Be aware if the email or text was sent to multiple people at the same time. And be suspicious of messages about credit and debit card and bank transactions which never identifies which one they're talking about. Typical invoices will list the last four of your card or account, and fake invoices can't list them because they don't have them. And make sure you use fraud and credit monitoring services. And don't believe promises of easy money. We all know that nothing is free, folks. Go on. Don't reply or respond to any phone calls, emails, texts, or other forms of communication from people that you don't recognize. And resist pressure. Legitimate companies and charities will give you some time to make decisions. And be sure to consult friends, your family, Google, and local law enforcement, and websites like the Internet Crime Complaint Center at www.ic3.gov. I'll give that to you again in just a moment. And if you fall victim, immediately contact your financial institution and local law enforcement agency and file a fraud claim. They may be able to stop spending transactions. Also, contact credit reporting agencies so that they can begin monitoring and freezing your credit. URL again for the Internet Crime Complaint Center is www.ic3.gov. www.ic3.gov. 9:57, Pima County supervisors will consider naming Green Valley Justice Court's courtroom after Tomas Ayala, the young man from Sahuarita who died after a drunken driver struck his vehicle head-on in May of 2023. Board of Supervisors Chair Adelita Grijalva added the item to Tuesday's meeting, noting in the resolution that Ayala interned at the Green Valley Court as a teenager. And Green Valley Justice of the Peace Ray Carroll told the Green Valley News on Friday that he came up with the idea of naming the courtroom after Ayala and found it was a good way to honor him. "We had known Tomas Ayala," Carroll said. "He is certainly remembered well by the staff at the court because he interned with us. He comes from a great family. He had a promising future and a budding career as a chef with a distinct restaurant." Carroll said that Ayala's life and potential were cut short by a drunken driver, and naming the courtroom after him was a way to keep his memory alive. "It's a difficult subject for a lot of people, but we believe it's part of the healing process to assure the community will remember Tomas," he said. "And the case is completed now in Superior Court, and it was an appropriate time to make the name stick to the courtroom." Ayala, who is 20 years old, was driving home from his job at a downtown Tucson restaurant when 24-year-old Cameron Ortega of Tucson crossed the center line on Old Nogales Highway near Quail Creek. Ortega had a 0.195 blood alcohol content, more than double the legal limit. Ortega received a 10.5-year sentence with 5 years probation in February after he pleaded guilty to manslaughter and driving while intoxicated. And more than 400 people from several states attended a traditional indigenous ceremony for Ayala a week after his death. And that ceremony lasted from sunset to sunrise. Jorge Encinas, the assistant editor. And real quickly, I don't have it in front of me, but I heard that Siskomani did in fact win over Engel. And that Kerry Lake lost to Ruben Gallego. Those are the only two that I'm aware of that are definite. And that'll do it for the reading of the Green Valley News, my friends. Thank you so much for listening. Mark DeGroft here. Wishing you a very, very pleasant day. Remember rain coming up on Sunday. That'll be a good thing. Or Friday, was it? Sunday, I think. Have yourselves a great week. I'll see you next week.